I'm adopted, and I have an older brother and a younger brother. And they're both freaking awesome. My dad was great growing up. I actually talked to him one time. I was like, "Dad, I'm so sorry."
Yeah.
And he was like, "For what?" And I was like, "Dude, I was a pain in the butt growing up."
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, "No, you were a pleasure." And I was like, I don't know.
Dude, I remember you had a debit card that your dad like put money on or something. Did it not work like that? Because I felt like we hung out. And I worked
for my dad. Whenever I was 16, I worked for my dad.
That's how you
get money on your debit card.
Yeah, I don't know.
You just go to work.
I would just like steal DVDs and sell them to Hastings, you know. I thought that was the better way to get money, yeah. You know. Welcome back to another episode of Two Dudes, One God Pod. Today, Pat and I have in the hot seat my buddy David, who's the last friend I have and probably going to offend some people. But this guy, like, we were friends from, like, 5 years old, Green Acres, Sunday school or something.
Yeah.
Maybe six. And we've been friends through, marriages, divorces, rehabs, yeah. Churches, church hurt, all kinds of stuff. He's like the last one that answered my call, you know, when I needed it. And,
yeah.
You know, like he called me when he needed it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like this dude, we know each other, but most of the people that watch this podcast or listen to it probably don't know David. Mm-hmm. I think he's got some interest in perspective, and Pat and I were just going to kind of see where this goes.
We've actually had David kind of on the show before.
That's true.
Whenever, yeah. I can't remember what episode it was, but you were just the engineer.
The financial guy.
Yes.
It was, that's who it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we were actually kind of like, dang, it was nice having an engineer. He was the one, like, go and watch things, make sure things weren't getting too hot.
Now that we're on Sundays, maybe we can do that, you know? Yeah. Just set you back over there. And
mm-hmm. Get in your corner, David. Keep you there. But yeah, like, I know me and you, we actually had lunch today. David actually saved my life today. I woke up this morning. So rewind to Thursday night. I pulled a drill bit out of my, tire that was like 8 inches long, and, I patched it and
how'd you know?
I just a quick look, you know. When it's familiar, you just know. But I pulled it out, patched it, and did the thing, went on about my business. Well, yesterday it held just fine, and then last night I guess the plug just all the pressure just let it off all at once, and I was trying to get some help, and he had literally sent me a video, which was pretty funny. He sent me a video, and I was like, you know what? Let's see what he's doing. So he came and rescued me. He took me to the auto parts store to get some more plugs and some slime and fix all that. But then we had lunch today, and we kind of talked a little bit about, like, I was thankful in my life because, like, I'll hear people talk about, like, some crazy things that their Sunday school teachers told them. And I'm like, I'm like a deer in the headlights because I didn't have that experience. Like, I had really good Sunday school teachers, like mm-hmm. the women who were in our church, like they served, took us in and, you know, taught us the Bible on curriculum and stuff like that. But I'm very thankful for those people that have been there in my life and that, you know, I can reach out to, and we might have to get some of my old Sunday school teachers on here. That'd be quite an interesting. They weren't perfect by any means, but it would.
You mean they weren't Jesus?
They definitely were not Jesus.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Did any of them ever tell you that every religion goes to heaven?
No.
I had one of those at Green Acres. Yeah, he was filling in, and it was the last time we had him because the next Sunday I was like, hey.
That guy was cool.
That guy, he said that, like, you know, Buddhists go to heaven. They were like, really, he said that? I was like, yeah. They're like, what else did he say? And I was like, fifth grade or sixth grade. Yeah. I was like, he said this and this and this. And they were like, thanks.
Dang. You're a watchman on the wall, young man.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny. Growing up, I didn't really listen much in Sunday school. Really? Like, I got the lessons.
Yeah.
But, like, it never really, like, soaked into my head that this is actual events. In my head, it was like stories.
Right.
Mm.
And even though I knew, oh yeah, these happened, for some reason, it just wasn't real to me.
Right. There was always something in your head that was kind of like,
it was kind of like we used to jam to like really distasteful rap music. And then we would tell our parents, like, it's just the beat, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, my kids tried to pull that on me.
I go back. Yeah. Well, look, I don't know that they were trying to pull something on you. Like, I genuinely, you know, like, I went back and listened to, like, one of Eminem's songs the other day. And I was like, this is really pretty rough, you know? And maybe, I don't know, you can make the argument that the new music's bad, too, but...
Mm. I think there was a little bit more of a veil with some of the older stuff. I mean, some of it was just in your face, but that's kind of where it started.
Yeah.
Now everything's shock value.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I mean, Eminem was shock value.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
The white dude in hip hop.
So was Kid Rock. And then he transitioned to like
big time. And, but it,
redneck
white. I think guy. That brought even more shock value into it. You know what I mean? It's like, why would the country people allow this dude from Detroit Trailer Park to come in and do the country music thing? But I mean,
whatever. I mean, like, let's be honest though. Like, if Kid Rock wanted to hang out, you'd go hang out with
absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But, yeah, like, sorry, we kind of got off on the wrong subject, but...
I'm going to set a timer.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is what conversations are like with us.
Yeah. Just as soon as I find out where the timer is. Set a timer for 45 minutes.
45 minutes, counting down.
Okay.
Yeah.
You've been put on notice.
So, yeah. So they were just stories to you, like,
yeah, I mean, like, not that I didn't believe them or didn't think that they were real or anything like that. It hadn't sunk in the gravity of everything. 'Cause you know, when you're in Sunday school and you're little, all the stories are very, I guess, kind of,
they're pieced apart. Like they don't give you the full.
Yeah, they details. Neuter it for sure. Yeah. And it's all supernatural stuff, but right. They present it to you in like a not supernatural way, I feel like.
Like with the story of David and Goliath, you know, like, oh man, he, you know, he was a hero. David, he slung the slingshot and killed Goliath and da-da. And then, you know, as an adult, you're like, dude, he killed this dude.
Yeah.
Like with a slingshot.
Well, I feel like you missed context as a kid too.
Yeah.
It's like you got the basics that like David was just a kid. Well, like he got sent down there to see if like any of the people needed food or anything.
Right.
You know? And he was like, oh, that guy? Like, yeah, I got that.
I'll take
you
know?
And then further context, like he selected the stones.
Yeah.
He selected enough stones to take out Goliath and his buddies.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the brothers of Gath. Yeah. It was the brothers of Gath that were there also.
Yeah, and it, you know, just going through childhood, you know, I just kind of like, oh, those are really, you know, cool stories, and I believed in God, and, you know, it wasn't exactly real to me. Like, it was real, but it wasn't, like, in my heart,
mm-hmm,
I guess.
Mm-hmm. Head knowledge.
Yeah, it was head knowledge, not heart knowledge.
And it's what everybody was doing. Like, the way we grew up, it just, you went to church.
Mm-hmm.
And like the people that you knew, they either went to Catholic Church or Green Acres, it seemed like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a couple like Colonial Hills or Marvin Grace. Or Grace, you know. Yeah, 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 yeah. But like,
A few First Baptist in there.
Yeah, well, it's pretty sanctuary.
Yeah. We had some Church of God people coming into the Assemblies of God every now and then. And when it came revival, it was a whole, like, our church growing up was more of a, it felt like more like a Baptist, but there was like a Pentecostal twang to it. Like,
yeah, people stood up
every now and then.
They held the package.
Every now and then somebody would like, you know, speak in tongues or whatever, but it wasn't like that big of a thing. But whenever revival came through, all the Pentecostals in the area came to our church.
Sizzling like bacon.
They would get down. I mean,
I feel like David and I, like, since we grew up with Paul Powell and David Dykes, who just passed recently, you know, and what we grew up with was relationship and education.
Yeah.
And so music and production was high value, but it was like stand up, shake your neighbor's hands. And then you would sit down and you would get a high level education. You know, Travis went to church with us. You know? I mean, his dad ran sound and audio or video or whatever. But it was a world class education, I feel like. You know, he always told a personal story. He always followed his bullet points from, you know, they would hand them out. You know what I mean?
Fill in the blank.
And it, fill in the blank notes. And it was always not just, hey, this is what happened in the Bible, but here's the historical context. Mm-hmm. This is what this word really means
in first century
church, you know. And then here's practical application. And, I mean, I think some people would say that Dr. Dykes was really like the first like executive pastor in the Southern Baptist kind of situation that we'd ever seen before. And he never took it. He never took it to, like, you know, televangelism level, you know.
Right. I know they had it locally. I think they still do have local services.
Oh, yeah.
For local TV
stations. Green Acres is aired every Sunday.
Yeah.
It's aired every Sunday. And the pastor there now, I forget his name. My family that listens knows, I'm sure. But he's like 40 or 41.
Yeah.
And, you know, doctor, I think. I mean, he's solid. Yeah. Everybody likes him.
Yeah.
So... I did meet him at my grandma's birthday. Hmm. His kids didn't have shoes on, so I was like, pretty cool guy.
Yeah, we like that.
you know what I mean? Like, yeah. he'd be all right.
They're staying grounded.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're listening and you're a member of a Baptist church and you're a child, you probably are grounded. Mm-hmm. Right now. Because I think that's what David and I dealt with a lot as kids. I don't know. But anyway, back to David.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, like I was saying, it was kind of, everything was kind of like pieced together and it didn't make contextual sense growing up. And, you know, we went to church camps and stuff. And I think that was the most that I felt God in my younger years was at a church camp, you know.
Yeah, Disciple Now, church camp, youth night, that was all the feeling stuff, but like the message was intellectual.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
And you know, I liked going to Sunday school better than I did church because people my age were there, but the messages that I got out of actual church were way more impactful in my life than the things that I learned in Sunday school.
Yeah. Got it.
And, you know, growing up, I feel like there was just a distance, even after I was baptized, even after there was a distance between me and God. And, you know, he was right there. I could probably reach out and touch him, but I just kind of stayed just far enough away.
Right.
And, you know, as I went through my teen years, that gap kind of grew and grew. And wasn't that I didn't believe, wasn't that, you know, I'd rejected God or anything like that at that point. But there was just a chasm between us. And, you know, my teenage mind was like, hey, you know, I don't even think about those things anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't think about God. I think about what girl I'm going to talk to. I think about my friends, how we're going to hang out.
Yeah.
So, you know, there wasn't any growth in that period of my life.
For us, it was like, whose car are we going to detail? And then, like, as we got older in our teens.
What stereo system are we going to
put in? what stereo system? Or we'd go eat at Whataburger at, like, 2 in the morning and then go to Walmart because it used to be open 24/7.
That was the thing to do.
And we'd be like, who can get the most numbers from unattractive women at Walmart at 4 in the morning?
And then we'd both come back with zero. And be like, yeah, I talked to, like, 5 girls and really, in reality, I didn't talk to any of them. I just said I was going to. Didn't talk to anybody.
Yeah. There were no attractive women at Walmart at 4 a.m.
Yeah, that's the excuse. And you couldn't even get their numbers.
I just couldn't find them. You know, they weren't there.
And you were one of the unattractive men there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, men, you know, 19 or something, you know.
Yeah.
One time we were at that Whataburger on South Broadway that's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. Right in front of the Whataburger, and we went in, ordered, sit down, and this guy came and got his food and sat down and started to unwrap his burger. And I lifted my legs back and lit a fire.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Heart on fire, and he just, and David's just like, oh my gosh, you know?
At first I was like, oh my gosh. And then I had my head on the table. I was laughing so hard because this dude across the restaurant looks over and he goes.
He just got up, walked over to the trash can, threw his whole meal away and left. You know?
I'm done.
Yeah. And I mean, you know. Shame on him, man. That was probably only a $10 Whataburger meal back then. It's like $17.50.
Yeah, it'd be like $20.
Dude, I haven't been to Whataburger in forever for that reason.
Mm-hmm. It's too expensive.
Too expensive.
Hey, shout out to Brahms, though, because you can get like a shake, fries, and a double fried meat burger for like $9.
Oh, you may really have to wait a little bit for it, but.
Well, they got to let it thaw.
Well, Brahms is never frozen.
Oh, that's right. I'm thinking of Wendy's.
Wendy's is also claimed to be never frozen.
Yeah.
100% beef.
Well,
they don't cut corners.
Because they got square patties.
It's square.
Yeah. Well, obviously, we see the things that may have gotten in your way between you and God. Trey lighting his farts on fire.
Yeah.
Definitely can be one of the things.
Well, I know that, like, you know, I went down the party rabbit hole in high school, and you stayed pretty away from that, you know? I mean, like, my first girlfriend, we were in the orchestra at Green Acres, the three of us, and, you know, you had a two-door Yukon, which was sick, you know? You were like...
I miss that truck.
The Uber driver for my first girlfriend's relationship, you know, for a minute, it felt like, you know, like... was better than my mom picking us up, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
But like, we had some good times, you know, we did some things, and I feel like I kind of disconnected, you know, by the time junior year, second half of the junior year, or first half of the senior year. I don't really remember.
You're pretty far out there.
When I came back into town, he wouldn't even answer my phone calls, you know? Like, I saw him somewhere, and I was like, hey, you know, we should hang out. And he was dude, I got to go, you know.
I'm driving, and then I see this dude with long blonde hair, super skinny, and he's like, hey, man, hey. And I'm like, who is this dude? Oh, that's Trey.
Not interested.
Dude, no. And then I think we pulled up to your mom's house, and we sat in the car and talked for like 6 or 7 hours straight.
Yeah.
And it was really good.
Good life talks.
Yeah.
Hashing some things out.
Crazy.
Yeah.
But I do remember at some point, you know, I don't know where you want to go with this story, you know, but at some point I was like trying to talk to you and you were like, I don't believe in God.
Yeah.
So like some dark stuff went down. Like you know, it's up to you, bud, but like, you know, you're adopted, but you got a younger and older brother that weren't adopted. I feel like we just skipped that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we started talking about stuff in church first. Whoa. So that kind of started
that,
right there.
That just floored me. It was like, whoa, that was...
So, yeah, I'm adopted, and I have an older brother and a younger brother. And they're both freaking awesome. My dad was great growing up. I actually talked to him one time. I was like, Dad, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
And he was like, for what? And I was like, dude, I was a pain in the butt growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, no, you were a pleasure. And I was like, I don't I don't know about it.
I remember you had a debit card that your dad like put money on or something. Did it not work like that? Because I felt like we hung out.
And I worked for my dad. Whenever I was 16, I worked for my dad.
That's how
you get money on your debit card.
Yeah, I don't know. I just
go to work.
I would just like steal DVDs and sell them to Hastings, you know. I thought that was the better way to get money, yeah. You know.
I never even thought about doing that as a kid.
Hey, when I got back from rehab, I went to Hastings to rent a movie, and I thought, surely I'm going to have a bunch of overcharges or whatever. But like on Wednesdays or Saturdays, I don't know, some day of the week, they'd let you sing like karaoke over the intercom and they would wipe your balance. And so I'm like bracing myself, the person in front of me singing Hit Me Baby One More Time or whatever by Britney Spears. I'm like, I got this. I'm gonna do it. I got up and they go, hey, you have a balance of $121. And I was like, okay, you want me to sing? And they were like, no, it's credit.
Oh.
I guess some of the stuff I sold, I had a credit at Hastings.
Oh.
You know?
So
that's how you know you're for sure on drugs at one point, you know. You just have like you're worried about going somewhere because you think you owe them money, but they owe you money. Anyway.
But yeah, so that little tidbit of information I should have shared from the get go.
No, you're good.
But going back to what you were talking about, you know, whenever I went through the rough patch, it was like my senior year, right after my senior year. I'd been dating this girl for about 4 or 5 years, I think. And then all of a sudden she broke up with me and I was like devastated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. I was like, what'd she say? You know, you were like,
yeah, she just, looking back on it, I was not the greatest boyfriend. I was pretty selfish. You know, we always did what I wanted to do and stuff like that. So I understand it now, but during that time I was like, I guarantee you she's got another guy and you know, like, my world was falling apart. Mm-hmm. Nobody loved me.
Kind of put your identity in with her being around, you know.
There's definitely, as a guy, there's like a security blanket of like, I'm attractive enough. I have a girl that likes me, you know. And when you look at, hey, what's got me tripped up? You know, what's this affecting? It's my pride, my success, if you look at a guy, you can judge him by the woman he's got and how she treats him, and vice versa, you know. So I think that, like, if you're counting on, hey, I've got this girlfriend, and then it's like, you know, can we just be friends, or, you know, then you're
I'm not good enough. All the insecurities.
It affects your pride, your ego, your security, your, you know, all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And during that time, you know, I didn't want to be held accountable to Christian beliefs. Mm. I wanted to go do what I wanted to do.
That's pretty strong.
And the having that guilt of I shouldn't be doing this. God does not want me doing this. I just, in my head, I was like, I'm just going to say I don't believe in God.
Yeah, it's much easier.
And, you know, that worked for a while. And, you know, I kind of gradually started moving back towards it. But for the most part, I was just pretty much complacent to the idea of God. And, you know, me and Trey started a band. And, you know, we'd go on to shows and do stuff and have that was a great time. I enjoyed that so much.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't until we were up at, it wasn't until about the time I got married that I really came back to God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what was it? You know, because I felt the same drive when I first got married to my ex-wife. And it's like I had this overwhelming sense of like, hey, I'm not in control of this ship.
Yeah.
And like, we need some help.
I need
that's help. Where I was. I was like, hey, if I can get these people that I love, that I'm married to, that I'm fathering, if I could get them into, you know, then maybe they'll listen to somebody at the church. Because, you know, I don't think they were listening.
Because they're not listening to me.
Yeah. For me, it was more of like, maybe we should probably go to church. Mm-hmm. And this guy that I worked with, his name was Bob Heiser.
Oh, yeah, Bob.
hounded me.
We gotta get Bob on.
He hounded me and hounded me. He was like, man, you gotta come to my church. My church is awesome. And I'm like, dude, everybody says that. He went to Harvest. And I was like, finally, I was just like, okay, just so this guy will shut up, we'll go. And the very first sermon that was preached there was about roadblocks in life. And are you experiencing a roadblock because of, you know, things that you're doing, sin in your life? And afterwards, you know, I looked at my then wife and I was like, man, I feel like I know what our roadblock is. And she was like, I do too. And we weren't married at the time. We were just...
cohabitation.
Yeah. And so we, you know, we abstained from sex for the most part until we got married. I mean, we didn't make it there, but I mean, we did pretty good.
Yeah.
And
it's a lot easier to not have sex after you're married than it is before you're married, turns out. That's going to be a clip. Yeah. Hey, if you're listening to this and you've successfully not had sex before you got married, I'm congratulating you right now. Yeah,
congratulations.
Yeah, but anyway.
But yeah, so, you know, we talked about the roadblocks and we both came to the same conclusion. We made it almost to marriage. And then, like, by that time, things were going really well in life for both of us. And, you know, we grew in the church. We were part of leadership. We were deacons, you know, all that. And then there were just some changes within the church that we didn't really like.
And y'all were like on, you were on the worship team too, or?
Yeah, I was on the worship team. I played bass most Sundays for the worship team. And you know, there was just some things there were, the church was going through some big changes. I'm talking like complete changes from what it currently was to what they wanted it to be. And we weren't necessarily on board with that change.
Like money stuff or what was it?
No, it was
structure.
They were wanting at one point to open like a coffee shop and make it like a coffee shop church, and didn't want, you know, it to be like a traditional church. They wanted it to be more like a coffee shop where you come learn about God. I think that's where they were going with it. And, you know, I really wasn't on board with that. And some of the leadership in that church, some of the elders, I really didn't agree with their viewpoint and everything. So, we kind of took the crappy way out and just moved churches, didn't say anything. And, you know, I feel bad about that because, you know, the pastor of that church was great. He's a super nice guy. And he called me and he was like, what's going on? And I was like, we're going to a different church.
And y'all were like living in the parsonage and stuff, weren't you?
Yeah.
That's the church you got married. I was there. Yeah.
And man, you know, if I could take that back, I would. I'd do it a lot differently. Still do it, just do it a lot differently. Yeah. Not take the, I guess the best way to describe it would be the bitch way out.
Yeah.
Just like, I'm just going to step back.
Step out, yeah.
Well, I mean, confrontation's hard, especially when it's people that you care about and you worship with and that you're in community with. It's...
But also, I would say, like, I'd probably be right there with you. Like, I have, like, obviously the church that we go to, like, it's open for anything. Like, you can definitely come there, hang out. We have groups that meet there. We even met there, you know, in the beginning of the show and everything. And, but, like, if I feel like if it became a coffee shop, then... I don't know that I would like be on. I feel like it would be like a dead horse type thing. Like, you know, like you're going to add an expense and then you're going to have to maintain the expense and then.
Well, I think I could be completely wrong, but I think the whole idea around it was a revenue source for the church.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, which is interesting because the pastor of that church, I don't remember what happened with all that, but he's the guy that's at Tyler Biker Church now.
Okay.
And so they've got like tools and lifts and things there, and they do tire changes. So like he succeeded ultimately in having a model similar to that where you can come in and hang out and, you know, do your own oil change there and pay a small fee or a donation because you use their equipment. Mm-hmm. And so, as far as I can tell, it seems to be a healthy growing church. I visited a few times back in 19, 18, somewhere in there. And
I think it's definitely the direction he needed to go.
Yeah.
More so than coffee.
And I mean, when we talk about Old Harvest, you know, like it was even a smaller church than Wilderness. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's accurate? So I think that at some level, you know, people don't think about this, and this is the part where ministry gets ugly, but like even this podcast, Pat and I, you know, have been doing this on a whatever we can donate ourselves budget, mm-hmm. you know, and we received a very generous $500 donation that allowed us to buy the program we needed to edit it, but like the microphones, the stand.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Is the recording device, the computers, the phone, the video, all the stuff is things that we've either acquired for the podcast or we already had that we're trying to repurpose. At some level, a church is a entity that has to operate. It has expenses. You know, our podcast has expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, probably more expenses than we thought when we signed up for it.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I think conservatively we're somewhere in the $3,000 a year range to run a podcast and there's zero income. You know, when you got a church, you have some staff members that you can't get around. You got to have a preacher, you know, and like we're lucky at Wilderness that Travis has some alternative sources of income.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know that the situation at Harvest was like the same level, you know, there was less people, I'm sure lower tithing amounts, you know, there's just a lot, I guess I'm just saying.
There's like a lot of context to it all.
Yeah. There's some things that happen here.
Right.
And I think that guy, what do they call him? Scout.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was cool. I've met with him a few times, you know, I went to Harvest once or twice, and then I've been to the biker church 2 or 3 times and, you know, it seems cool. The guy preaches behind like a road glide fairing, you know, I mean, it's pretty far apart from what Wilderness feels like, but it's the closest thing in Tyler, Texas to like just outside the box kind of a church.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'd put it on par with like a cowboy church. You know, there's definitely some people at a cowboy church that are wearing a hat and the boots and don't own a horse.
Yeah.
And but I would say that probably most of the people that go to Tyler Biker Church rode in on a bike, you know.
And I'm pretty sure that church like spurred off of Cross Brand somehow.
I think there were some people that were going to both.
I think Woody, do you know Woody?
Yeah, I know Woody.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I knew his stepson I think it was his stepson that passed away a few years ago.
You were living at the parsonage of that church and you bounced and you were like living there and going to another church, right?
Right. Yeah. For a little while. I let them know. Cause like they sent us a note saying, hey, you know, the building's up for sale.
And this is around like you got married and we're going to that church. We're involved in that church. And this is around the time that you adopted your 3 kids.
Yes. Yeah. So,
cause I got to see that too. So that's another huge thing. I think you're adopted and your parents divorced, but I guess we'll get back to that. But and then you
adopted,
got married, and adopted her children,
right?
You know, like legally. Like I was there. They took a picture with the judge. It was like I cried. Everybody cried. It was a crazy cool thing.
Yeah.
Yep. So we did that, and then we started going to a different church, and again, you know, things were great, you know, and then we started having teenagers that are going through teenager stuff, and just they, like, my oldest wasn't getting the answers that
he wanted,
that he needed. He had been asking, because he kind of started doubting God, and started asking questions. Well, they saw these questions as being combative.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly what happened. I have his story and then I have their story. Mm-hmm. But from what I understand, they pretty much told him to stop asking questions. Mm. And about that time...
Yeah, we don't talk about that here.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And he, you know, he was like, what the heck? You know, who am I supposed to ask these questions to?
Yeah,
so,
where else can I go?
So he, they told him, you know, I think they told him, don't come back to youth, if I'm remembering correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had him sit down with a meeting with the pastor, just him and the pastor. They could talk. And he said that it was pretty much the same situation. And, you know, they just kept telling him, he just has to believe. He just has to believe.
Mm. Yeah, that's for not somebody, what you tell a teenager.
For somebody that's doubting, mm-hmm. you know, just saying, oh, believe this thing. Well, I mean, that's what cults do. They just tell exactly. you, believe what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And,
we are the authority.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'd been in this church for a while and I knew everybody and, you know, these are good people. I just think that the way they delivered it to him, or at least the way he perceived it, was dismissive.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I mean, he kind of went on what I would call a spiral. He'd call it just, you know, like living life.
Right.
But, you know, we came home. My then wife's dad died and we came home and, we were going to his funeral and then something happened where it was called off. So we turned around and went back home, walked into the house and our oldest had hotboxed his room.
Mm-hmm.
Entire house smelled like weed. And I mean, and one thing that I've always told them, I'm like, not in my house.
Right.
I mean,
you don't pay bills here. Like,
yeah. I mean, he had a younger brother who was impressionable.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter, I don't, you know, at that time I didn't think she would do anything like that, but I think maybe she did. I don't know.
Yeah.
But she was always a good kid. For the most part. And, you know, as they got older, they got more challenging and would challenge, you know, our belief system. And, you know, that was a real difficult thing because we raised them a certain way. And then all of a sudden they start thinking on their own. And, you know, in my head, I was probably overbearing about a lot of things because in my head, no, I want you to be a Christian. I want you to believe in God. I want you to do these things, but it's not my responsibility for them to give their life to Christ.
Yeah. You can't do it for them.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I really struggled with.
Mm.
I always felt like I need to be doing more. Mm-hmm. I need to be doing more. And, you know, as they kind of drifted further and further away, it was really rough.
Yeah.
And I continued to cling to them. And I think that ultimately pushed them away more.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a real tough thing about parenting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're kind of more of a rule follower. You're like, well, oh, yeah. You know, like when I think back to when we were younger, you know, if your dad said, don't do this, you were like, oh, I can't do that. Dad said not to do it. And maybe that was generational, you know,
maybe
because I don't feel like the current children in the universe are like, I'm not supposed to do this, you know?
I don't think that they even have a thought that crosses their mind. I shouldn't be doing this.
Hey,
this
what were chair. You thinking when you did that? Nothing?
Nothing.
Yeah. Nothing. They're telling the truth, guys.
I think one thing that a lot of people experienced, you know, you've got the people who are like, I don't believe in this, this, that, and the other, and then they go to the pastor, and then, you know, they're not getting answers. I think the problem with the church that we grew up in, it was really an echo chamber. Mm-hmm. And I know I can think back of several situations where I was just learning about something and I brought it up in church, and then somebody like was like, you shouldn't be learning about that. And I'm like, yeah, but the thing is like, I'm learning about this because I know I think that God is in opposition to this, and mm-hmm. I should know something about it. And then it just kind of got, you know, suppressed, and then I just stopped caring. But then whenever I came back to faith, those questions were still there, but I knew that there was an answer, but it wasn't going to be in the echo chamber of everybody that just go to church, just believe, that's all you got to do. That's not what our faith is. You know, in Peter, it says that we're supposed to be give a reason for our faith. And I think that that's for everything in our faith. And there's still things that, you know, we don't know, that we're never going to get to know this side of glory. But I can look at other things around that same subject and situation and be like, well, God says this. You know, why would I go that route?
Well, I think Travis had a great series, like, I Just Can't Believe in God or something.
Yes, yeah.
And he went over that, this kind mm-hmm. of crisis of faith. And for mm-hmm. me, it was true, too. It's like, I grew up, I believed it. I don't know that I quite would categorize myself the way David did. Like, it felt real. And I did have a relationship with God, and I didn't feel distant from him. Mm-hmm. Right up until...
You did.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yep. It was like 15 freshman year,
yep.
The summer after freshman year, right before I turned 16. It was like the first girlfriend, the first kiss, the first weed, the first alcohol. And then it was like immediately there was a divide that I could feel. It was like, boom. But the thing was, is that girls and drugs and alcohol felt just as good as the God thing, and it didn't take any effort. It just kind of came. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, it's immediate.
It's easier. Instant gratification. Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's like what we teach kids in Sunday school it's not that it's not true. It's just mm-hmm. that it's not the full story.
Yeah.
And so that whole, like, hey, we don't talk about this here, just do the right thing, just say no, it just didn't work. And then when I got a taste of what the world had, what the devil had for me, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, well, y'all said this was bad, and right. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You know? And so then later when I came back, I had to confront some of that stuff. And I mean, Travis is, he's got, it's like a 5-part sermon or mm-hmm. something on that.
Yeah.
It really nailed it. He talked about the nuns, you know, the people that don't have a, you know, not the Catholics, but, you know, the people that proclaim that they don't have a religious affiliation, that they think religion's bad, mm-hmm. Or, you know, that don't identify as a Christian, mm-hmm. you know?
So one thing I do appreciate about our church, I'm not saying that everybody knows everything,
hmm.
but I think there's a willingness to investigate, like, okay, why did this person say this? Did you watch something? You know, did you see some dude that was spouting off all these random facts that, you know, all this stuff goes on and you're questioning about it? Okay, let's go and look at it. Let's go see what the truth is, was what he was actually saying the truth, you know? I think that there is a willingness in, and not just in our church, I think it's in this generation of church, because, you know, we've listened to the 90s of pop culture, you know, dragging Christianity through, and even in the 2000s and 2010s and 20s even, dragging Christianity through the mud. And there's still people that are trying to do it, but there's a lot more of an openness to go the route of faith, because we've seen the train wrecks that all these other concepts and beliefs have left behind. You know, we've seen where their end result ended them, and it's like, and even their sects of Christianity, like I will not ever subject myself to the Word of Faith movement, which is like Benny Hinn, Jimmy Swaggart, you know, all those, and what's his name, Joel Osteen. Like, I'll never subject myself to them and their teaching, because I've seen the trail of trash that gets left behind. Mm-hmm. You know, if God didn't bless you on this day, it's because you didn't have enough faith on this day. But if you'll have the faith and you'll make the, you'll donate the money and all that, then God will bless you. Well, now I see everything as a blessing from God. You know, I read a quote the other day. I can't remember who it was, but it said, "What punishments of the world are not gifts from God. It is a privilege to exist, not just to be blessed, not just to be functioning, not just to be like a millionaire, but it's a privilege to exist and to be able to come to the Father and just be heard by Him." Mm-hmm. He may not even answer the question the way that you want it to be answered that day, but if you keep looking for Him in all the little things, then you will see Him. And I think that's way more important than having 7 Maseratis. It'd be nice. Don't get me wrong. It'd be nice, but I don't know. I think the generations of Christianity have really put such a focus on, you know, the things of material that, that we kind of lose the plot on it, you know? And I think that with your story, a lot of the things is like churches weren't equipped properly to answer, you know, your kids' questions. And I'm sure your kids' questions eventually became your questions. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you get challenged on your faith. The next thing you know, you're like, okay, well, what is the answer to that? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, from where we were, you know, we were at that church for a while. Even after all this went down, we were still forcing the kids to go to youth there. And then COVID happened.
Ah, COVID.
And mm-hmm. They shut down the church. We didn't have any meetings there. And whenever they said, okay, we're about to start the church back up, I, you know, signed up for the worship team, all that. Well, I didn't get any kind of call that church had started back, and I wasn't on the roster for the worship team, and nobody said anything to me. So that was like, and you know, there could have been something that, you know, fell through the cracks. I don't know, but I took it personally.
Yeah.
And so we just stopped going to church.
Well, you just didn't start going again.
Yeah, like, I didn't start back like going.
The government
to church.
Made you stop.
So that's the deal. You know, it was an assault against, you know, free assembly.
I
and
truly
religion.
Believe.
Yeah,
100%.
I think that it was a demonic deal. Mm-hmm. That whole deal. And so you got out of the routine of it. You got mm-hmm. out of the routine of meeting with these people, playing with them, being in community with them. They forced you home, mm-hmm. and when they reopened, you just didn't go back.
I didn't go back.
And from my perspective, your life was at least stable, like pre-COVID.
Yeah.
Things were, not everything was great, but things were good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then once we stopped going to church, I mean, I feel like that was kind of the beginning of the end mm-hmm. of a lot of things. And, you know, my marriage fell away, and there's just a lot of stuff that happened during that time. Relationships with kids went away, went through a divorce, and you know, that's one of the toughest things that I think I've ever had to go through. There's
it,
a lot.
It was tough on you as a kid when your parents divorced too.
It was, but like I said, I was so off in the clouds that like it sucked. It was really hard, but you know, it didn't bother me that bad. As a kid, not many things bothered me. I was in my own little world. And I think anybody who knew me back then, adults, could probably tell you I was always off in my own little world. But, so got a divorce. My ex moved up to Arkansas. My two older kids moved up there with her. And I got custody of our youngest. And so it was just me and him, which is cool. But, you know, there's a certain financial burden that, first of all, having a kid is a financial burden. And on top of that, you know, any debt that I had coming out of the divorce, and I didn't ask for child support. I didn't ask for, you know, spousal support or anything like that. Mainly cause it just didn't sit well with me. I honestly wanted her to go live her life and, you know, be away from me and I'll rebound, you know, as a guy, I felt like, okay, this marriage fell apart. It's my fault. I need to bear the burden of any consequences that come from it. So,
and that's what society wants you to believe.
Yeah, I was staunchly disagreeing with all the things and decisions and steps, and I was like, you know, but there's a lot. It was a mess. It was a mess. Like, look, you don't get married with the intention of getting divorced.
Right.
And y'all didn't get married with a prenup so that the divorce would be easy, because most people don't, because they don't intend to get divorced. But there was definitely some real imbalance and some real kind of offset stuff. You know, there was, you know, I don't know if you want to talk about this stuff, but I mean, you know, like she decided that she was different. She wasn't straight. She's mental illness. Just, you know, like watch TikToks. I've got this, you know, I mean, it's just, it was like it. And all of that, I think, started when they shut down the church. It's like, now you're isolated. And then they, you know, they shut down a lot of things, and like, you know, you were retail, you know? And so you got the weirdest part of it, you know, then she's working from home. It just, everything about that whole deal. And like, I see where you took the non-combative route. Like you wanted everybody to be okay. And you took the responsibility for the failure of that deal. But like, I just want to affirm you, like, man to man, I've been divorced too, and I took responsibility for my stuff too. But I don't think it's completely fair. I think
it's a weight that we take on whenever we're in that situation, that we shouldn't be taking on the full brunt of that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, I took on the situation, I took on the responsibility of the divorce, all that kind of stuff, but I wasn't the one that stepped outside of my marriage. You know what I mean? Right. I was the one that was committed. I was the one that was taking my family to church every Sunday, who wanted my daughter to be in a Christian household. Like, I was on the forefront of that, but I still had my struggles. No doubt about it. But then the responsibility of somebody else stepping out of our marriage, like that's not, that wasn't on me. And it seems like anytime you bring up a woman cheating, then, oh, well, what did the man do?
Right.
You know, what did the man do to cause that? You're not hearing the problem here. Mm-hmm. Is we're two people and we both have decisions to make in that situation. So I want to affirm you also, like, you can't carry that weight.
But he did. And, right. You know, like,
You can't continue it.
It's a hot take, though. Right. It's like, hey, look, marriage isn't 50-50. It's 100-100. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I don't have 100.
Yep.
You know? So you've got to do what you got to do. But my take on that is, if the man doesn't lead, the woman will figure something out.
Yep.
They don't have chill, these mm-hmm. women. They can't just sit back and just chill. You've got to lead. And if they won't follow and you won't lead, it will divorce. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, see, I feel like, especially towards the end of my marriage, I didn't lead like I should.
Right.
And, you know, I'd be like, hey, let's go start going back to church. Oh, I don't know. Okay, fine, we won't.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and then it was just like the amount of complacency that I had towards the end of my marriage, like, I feel is a big contributing factor too.
Well, you want your wife to be happy.
Right.
Right. And so, like, we get sold this lie, and come at me, I don't care. But we get sold this lie, like, happy wife, happy life. Mm-hmm. Well, if my every waking moment is focused on making my wife happy,
nothing's going to get done.
Bro, happiness is an inside job.
Exactly.
Okay. So marriage is 100-100. I'm in charge of whether I'm happy or not. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's between me and God. It has nothing to do with my wife. Yeah. I've seen people in horrible situations that both have been able to maintain an acceptable level of happiness, mm-hmm. you know, like a good to bad ratio in the relationship. And I'm always asking people that are having struggles, I'm like, where do you draw the line? Mm. Right? Like, is 60% happy, happy enough?
Yeah.
Is
can I get by 50% with
40? Happy? Is 40% happy okay? Yeah. Like, where do you draw the line? Yeah. You had already, in my perspective, you had already reached that level of like, hey, I'll do whatever I have to do to make sure that things are good and mm-hmm. she's okay and everything's okay. And that's not a masculine energy. That's a feminine energy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that you're feminine.
Right.
It just, it before you know it, you look up and you're like, oh, what did I do wrong? What did I do it. I'm like, are you okay? You okay? You okay? Yeah. Michelle's like, don't ask me that again. I'm like, thank you. I'm sorry. Yes. You know? Okay. She's like, no, don't say I'm sorry. I'm like, okay, okay. Because what I've got right now, I didn't even think it was a possibility.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Like, from my perspective, the relationship I have now, and maybe we'll hear more about that next week, but like, from my perspective, it is what would have happened if you got to see what happened during the happily ever after in a Disney movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that, like, it's unobtainium or something. Like, what I've got right now is crazy good. Mm-hmm. And I think that there was a point in David's life where he thought that too. Mm-hmm. And David and I were real tight until we both got with our ex-wives, and then our ex-wives didn't like each other. And then David and I just quit seeing each other. So, like, David and I were, like, super tight, and then I got on drugs. One time we smoked weed listening to a Rodney Carrington CD at the Lake Tyler Marina. Okay, and like a camper. And I got him high. We're getting high. And then it's like 2 a.m.
We're out on the porch of a camper.
We got a Dr. Pepper can we poked holes in smoking this thing. And this guy's like, hey, who's over there, you know? And David's like, oh, it's just me, you know, And so we go back inside.
No. You have to say it like I said. It's just me. I'm David. I'm Cindy's son. I'm just over here. We're watching the trailer. And
bro, we get back in that trailer, and he's like, that guy's a state trooper.
So the entire night, Trey is like peeking out the blind.
Of course,
oh, dude, I think I see some lights.
I think I see
some lights.
I'm
like, the cops are here, dude. They're coming for us.
Go get the AKs.
And like, he's starting to freak me out and stuff. And then we kind of start to calm down. Things kind of start calming down. He starts trying to order like porn on the DirecTV.
Yeah, DirecTV. I'm like, dude, we can get the good stuff on DirecTV.
I'm like, I don't think so. Don't do that. Hey, we're gonna get in trouble.
Like, real talk. At this point in my life, what I've seen is Channel 430. 32 all scrambled in the middle of the night, yeah, you know, right, on, yeah, on a CRT TV. Right. So I was like thinking, maybe we can actually see something here. But anyway, but like, so we were super tight. We got to that. And then I jumped off the deep end, and then David and I disconnected. Mm-hmm. And then we reconnected, and we were super tight in our early 20s. And then we both got married. He got married, what, 26, 27, something in there?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
25, maybe, I don't know. You before you got married, our significant others decided that they hated each other for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty much the end of it, you know? Yeah. I had a daughter and two stepkids, and he had three kids. And like, you just, as an adult, it's like, when do you want to hang out next year? You know? And then, and I think she would say, go hang out with him. But then he would hang out with me, and then he would get home and she'd be like, well, everything fell apart because you weren't here, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just, at the end of the day, we had this 7 year, 8 year, 12 year. I don't know how long it was. Where we'd
see each other maybe once.
Once or twice a year.
Yeah.
And so, and I don't know where you're going with this story, but like, I got divorced. And then I went through 2.5, 3 years of trying to figure out what was wrong with me. And that's when I ended up back at church.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'd fixed the drug thing at 18, but like,
still have these problems.
You know, I come out of a marriage that was, that destroyed me mentally, emotionally, you know, whatever. And so I did what most guys do when they get divorced, and I ran chasing women. Mm-hmm. And the end of that, it was like demoralizing, you know. I ended up realizing that I was super jacked up. So I ended up back in church at Spar at Cross Brand, and then I ended up here. And then, I mean, I was with Michelle. I was dating Michelle. Mm-hmm. When you called me, he called me in the middle of the night, and he was like, I ruined everything. This marriage is over. You know, he's like, are you awake or something? I call him, like, yeah, it's like 2 a.m. He came over. We talked all night, you know. And so... How long has that been?
About 2 years.
2 years. So like, we've been back. That's probably 2.5 years. And you think, or two?
Maybe. Because I just got out of my lease and I moved to Bullard 2 years ago.
Yeah, but you lived together for like 4 months or something.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so I think it was about 2.5 years. And he was like, we started hanging out, and he was like, hey man, I got to do something. You want to play disc golf? And we used to play disc golf. And so I started playing disc golf again. Then we started seeing each other multiple days a week. Mm-hmm. And then he started coming to Wilderness, and then he went to Freedom Weekend, mm-hmm. which was super cool, you know, and I think impactful. So, that's what's up. I'm like, maybe we can hit some of the good stuff, because unless we miss some of the bad stuff.
Unless you,
I mean, there's plenty. Yeah, of bad.
We probably have 5 episodes with you, dog.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, really there's plenty of bad, plenty of good.
But we don't have to go through all the
details. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if there's anything that I brought up that you didn't want to bring up, let me know, and I'll.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't want to really say anything about my ex or anything like that on the, I don't want to put her stuff out on the internet. Right. I mean, that's just not cool. But you know, the night that, you know, I knew it was over, you know, I there were so many thoughts going through my head that night. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought, what the heck is going on? I thought nobody's going to understand what happened, or nobody's going to understand, you know, anything. And, you know, went over to Trey's and he talked to me, and, you know, there were some things that he helped me realize.
I probably didn't listen very much either. I was just like, sit down. I was like, here's all the answers to the problems. You know, I'm not a very good spar conversation guy, right? Yeah. I'm like, you're wrong about that, David. Shut up. Shut up.
Get that out of here.
Listen to me.
But, you know, and you know, in your defense, I mean, there's a lot of things that you were right about.
Hmm.
But, you know, there's, if you hadn't answered the phone that night, I don't know what I would have done.
Hmm.
And, you know, after, you know, shortly after that, you know, I started thinking thoughts like, you know, I've got all this debt, and my kids are, you know, most of my kids are living up with their mom. I'm probably worth more to them dead right now than I am alive. Mm-hmm. And I never really like seriously considered anything like that. But, you know, the thought crossed my mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing that really anchored me was, you know, what's my son going to do? What's my youngest going to do? Mm-hmm. He's living with me. I can't do anything like that. And then, you know, talking with Trey and, you know, he talked some sense into me whenever I'm thinking stupid. And then even then, I still thought stupid on a lot of things, but
yeah, we've all been there.
Absolutely.
I'm probably going to think stupid later today.
I'm not the best at following advice, even if it's sound good advice.
Yeah. You'd be like, yeah, that sounds really good. I'm like, cool. And then the next day I'm like, how'd that go? Oh yeah, I didn't do that. I'm like, okay. Yeah.
But, you know, and afterwards, you know, I decided I was trying to think about how am I going to live my life? And, you know, my first instinct was like, yeah, let's do, you know, like what you were saying, I'm just going to go out and run through some chicks and blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, I felt like something was calling me in a different direction. Mm. As bad as I wanted to do that, I felt like I needed to draw in closer to God.
Yeah.
Rather than
getting like a pen pal from like a inmate at prison or something. Hey girl, Smith when County. You get out, we're going to take you on a date. I'm going to send you some commissary. You didn't do that. You were I did give him that advice for the record. I was like, hey man, there's women out here that are just like, there's homeless dudes that have girlfriends, bro. Like we can get you a girl.
Yeah.
He was like, no, I'm not interested.
He's like,
I'm waiting for God to handle that.
The next person that I, you know, I want the person that I get in a relationship with to be very strong in their faith.
Yeah.
I want them to, you know, I'm not going to mess around with somebody that's, you know, just here for the time being.
Right.
I'm dating for, you know, the future, not for right now.
You heard it here first, ladies. David's right. Single
and open to mingling.
Ready to mingle.
I wouldn't say ready to mingle, but he's open to mingle.
Consult God first before talking to David.
You better talk to God before you talk to David, because he gonna put you in check.
We'll see how well that battle between the flesh and
right.
Sometimes I lose that battle. But so, you know, going forward, I just decided to, you know, draw in closer to God. And I didn't really go to a church. I mean, I went to Cross Brand a couple times with you. I went to Wilderness, but I wasn't going like on a regular basis. It was just kind of every once in a while. And it was really just to see Trey and say, what's up to Trey.
Yeah.
And then I started coming more frequently. And I think it was probably at the Holy Shot where we go out and shoot shotguns while the wives are at the women's lock-in. So all the guys bring all their kids and everything out there, and we shoot shotguns, eat barbecue. It's a great time.
Mm-hmm.
But out there, you know, I started actually talking to some people, and I talked to Casey Parker. Mm-hmm. Sat around the fire and talked to him for like an hour or two.
Mm-hmm. It's easy to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, talked to several people that night and, you know, really felt like I'd gotten a little closer with some of the people in the church. And then I did the Men's Freedom Weekend. Mm-hmm. And that was like, just from before that to after that, mm-hmm. it's a world of difference between the way I viewed the church and the way the men in the church viewed me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's something that's pretty cool.
And you had, for at least 6 months, you had been coming to church before the Freedom Weekend, and you had been intentionally coming a little early, staying a little late, trying to talk to people.
Well,
but at those two events, the Holy Shot and the Lock-In, I think it gave, or not the Lock-In, that's really what
the Holy Shot and the Men's
Freedom Weekend. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, and me and Pat were talking about this earlier. You know, it's real easy. And I find it really easy for me to just sit back and blend in and not
engage
with anybody, yeah. Not, you know, smile, hi, how are you, you know, stuff like that. But actually engaging with people, it's really easy for me to do because I like to observe people. I like to watch. I like to sit back and watch, and I don't say a whole lot. But whenever I say something, chances are I've probably thought about it for a while before I said it.
Got it.
And
I don't have that problem.
Yeah.
So it's a blessing and a curse, you know. Yeah. There's people that are like, I know nothing about that guy. He just stands there and smiles at people, you know. I'd remember him in, you know, I wouldn't know him if I saw him out in public. And then there's other people that are like, yeah, dude, we had a conversation and it was, you know, real deep and I got to know him real well and he's a real good guy or something like that.
Mm.
But that's only the few people that I engage with, you know?
Right.
And you know, of course everybody wants to be liked. So after going through the Freedom Weekend, I felt like there was people that were, you know, willing to just talk with me, you know, and people that cared about my life and what was going on in my life.
Well, that's the thing about the shared experience, you know, the shared experience that we have with each other in those events, like they're pretty special. You know, it's not like you have to, it's not even like you have to have like the most deep and meaningful conversation. It just happens, you know, and it's a very organic thing. Yeah. And I think that's what's really
it's hard to make friends after high school, you know, or college maybe.
And the crazy thing is I'm really good with one-on-one conversations, but you get me in like a group of people and I'm just not, I'm not good in that situation. Yeah. But, you know, they'll start talking about duck hunting and I've never gone duck hunting.
Yeah.
I would love to go duck hunting, but I don't have a shotgun. I don't have.
Yeah. Oh, I got you, bro. We got shotguns.
Yeah. But, you know, and right now financially it's not a thing.
Right.
But, you know, things are looking better on that note. So maybe in the future here.
Speaking
I'll get to
of
go.
Duck hunting, like we've got a couple hunts coming up that like they put together in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go, but, like, there's no way, dude. There's just no way.
Duck hunting's expensive.
If I solve the money problem, I can't solve the time off work problem.
Yeah.
And if I solve the time off work problem, the money problem's even bigger. So yeah. It's like, it just ain't going to happen.
I've had several people approach me about hunts coming up this year. And I've got a friend of mine that is in New Mexico right now. He's already told me, he's like, bro, you just come out for a week. I'll give you a bear tag. I will let you sleep in my camper. We can go hunt some freaking bears.
Yeah. Dude, I want to hunt bear.
I'm telling you, dude. Like, I was like, bro, I wish I could
go,
right
we'd
now.
We'd go hunt kudu with Dr. Blom.
Yo.
Dude, I'm going next year. Real talk, I'm going to Africa with another guy that, you know, who I'm trying to get onto this show.
Got it.
Rhino. But, yeah, like, I'm definitely going to Africa next year.
You know, there's a lot of camaraderie around hunting in general.
Mm-hmm.
I remember growing up, we always went deer hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say some of the best times that I had were deer hunting with my dad and with my uncles and my brothers. I mean, just there's a sense of closeness.
Mm-hmm. A shared experience.
Yeah, when you're out there. So, you know, I miss that. I wish that's something I could provide for my kids right now, but can't.
We'll get you somewhere.
Yeah, I'd like to try to find somebody that's got a deer lease that, you know, isn't ungodly expensive and be
good
like,
luck.
All right, let's go.
Yeah, good luck. But
you know, like I said, after Freedom Weekend, things were a lot different. I've made a lot of connections with men in the church, people that I'm like, I would probably be intimidated by this person outside of the confines of church. And even in the confines, I was a little intimidated by a few people.
Yeah.
You know, and you get to know them and you're like, okay, well, you know, they're just people like the rest of us.
Yeah, they're
and
just idiots.
We're all just idiots.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like that's helped me a lot with going through my stuff because, you know, you always think that you're the only ones going through problems and you're the only one that feels a certain way. And then you talk to other men and they're like, yeah, dude, every day.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, really?
You?
You're the one that's got your shit together. Yeah. How do you, how do you have problems?
Right.
but yeah, you know, we all struggle with similar things, and having somebody to talk to about it and somebody that can help dig you out of holes that you've dug yourself into, you know, that's, man, that's, it's something that you can't, you don't find everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's,
well, we definitely enjoyed you being around at the church, you know, going to different events and seeing different things. Like, you'd be surprised just what a ministry of presence can do. You know, just being available, being around, you know, it, you never know, like, what the opportunity of, hey, I don't know, can someone go get a spatula for me? Yeah, I'll go grab that real quick. And then you come back and then, boom, this dude just unloads everything that he's been going through on his own, in his own mind. And then you're like, I just went and got a spatula. That's really all I was trying to do. And next thing you know, here we are. So, yeah, I think the ministry of presence is something that is underlooked within the church, and something that I think that everybody should really just try and tap into, is just being around.
And David's done a good job of that. I mean, after Freedom Weekend, he came back and served on the Squirrel Camp team. Yeah. He's played bass on stage at church for, you know, he...
One time.
Yeah, once. One time. Yeah, uno, but he did it.
Yeah.
And he's done sound a bunch now, right? More than even I have, and I was the first one in on that deal, and then you came in, and now you're kind of a pro at that. Nah. We've been just so busy, dude. Yeah. It's just like we were doing the hosting front end kind of stuff, and it's been too crazy this summer. Yeah. So. But we did make it through all summer with two services all summer, which is impressive, even though the 9 got a little thin a few times.
Yeah.
A couple of times it started 15 or 20 minutes into the 9.
Were you there this morning?
I was, yeah.
It's a good message.
It was.
A lot about the stuff that a lot of toes stepped on today for me.
Yeah. Definitely stood on mine a little bit. Not stood, but like, hey, you're fixing to have to start having some conversations with your kid, you know? And I think that's important.
Yeah. I was wondering if lunch conversation, you know, prior to y'all getting here, I wondered if y'all talked about that a little bit, you know, and especially just the idea, because I think that's a huge trap for young families, is to make the kids the most important thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I can definitely see where my previous marriage suffered in that aspect some. And then it's even worse if one of the parents doesn't do that. If both parents are like, yes, the kid's the most important thing, I think you can go a little bit farther. But if one of the parents is like, I'm the most important thing, and the other parent's like, the kid's the most important thing, well, then you're really rowing against the current, you know? So,
yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, making the kid the center point of your existence, you know, basically putting them above God is very easy to do. Mm-hmm. Because you love your kids. You don't want to see them suffer. But at the same time, they have to grow.
Yeah, they got to learn things for themselves. And
that's been really tough for me. And, you know, got me thinking a lot about, well, man, what should I have done differently?
Right.
And, you know, you can't really, there's nothing you can do about your past. So, you know, what could I have done differently needs to change to what can I do differently now? Mm-hmm. Which is a different conversation because all my kids are pretty much grown. Yeah. So it's a little bit different, but, you know, I still have faith that, you know, the kids that are not following the Lord, or, you know, one of my kids, probably two of my kids are atheist, and the youngest is just kind of like I was, just kind of complacent you know, just like, I'm just out hanging out with my friends. I don't know.
I'm just in the environment.
And, you know, I pray every day that, you know, God will reveal things to them and that they will listen. But I cannot be the one to make that decision for them.
Right.
And that is very tough.
Mm-hmm. You can't save your kids from their own testimony.
Who was it? Was it Trent that said
Trent
that?
Said yes. That. Yeah.
Yeah. That was so good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, dang, David, man, this has been good. We'll have to get you back on.
We'll have to get you back in engineering.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like there was a lot of jumping around, but... Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's
all. And Trey, you didn't even finish the story about that at Johnny's trailer. About the time that we all started calming down, the CD that we were listening to started over. And just, it was completely silence.
Yeah, and we're just like sitting in this trailer high as a kite.
All of a sudden you hear, "How y'all doing?" That's how the CD started out.
I was like, "We got to go. We got to go."
Oh, man.
We
got
to go.
That is funny.
Yeah, it's wild. I'm like, I don't know why we're smoking out of this Dr. Pepper can. There's like an Indian peace pipe, like a real artifact, real deal. I'm like, we should use that. David's like, we can't use that.
That's against
the rules. I'm like, why not? You know?
It felt disrespectful to him.
Here's the funny thing. Everything we did was disrespectful, but, you know, here's the funny thing. Fast forward a couple years, that dude, I never met him, the trailer owner.
Yeah.
Never met him. But he was a member at the AA group that I went to when I first came back to town. And he, I guess, had died or something. But, like, they all had stories about this guy. Really? He was, like, a legend. And so when I told them that I got high in his trailer, they all thought it was hilarious. You know, they're like, you know, I'm like, I didn't use the peace pipe. They're like, oh, dang, that would have made the story even better, you know?
He used that all the time.
Also, they were like, if he ever found out, he would have killed you, you know? Like, apparently this dude was a scary dude or whatever. So I didn't know, you know? It was just like a cool place at the lake that I could go and hang out at.
Yeah, just escape.
Anyway, right on. Well, hey, that wraps us up for this episode of Two Dudes, One God Pod. We'll see y'all next week. Thank you for enjoying this episode. Bye.
Bye.